Okay, today is 43 days in the Omer Yom Yerushalayim Tovshin Zamach Zayin. We're holding today on Daf Yud Gimel, and we are on Yud Beis Amud Beis, still trying desperately to catch up over here with this tough daf in the past few days. And we're up to, at last, the closing words of the Mishnah, and that is that you cannot say that there would be a case where someone would have a mother-in-law who would fall to him for Yibum, where the mother-in-law would be Mima'enes, because it's too late. Because in order to be Mima'enes, she has to be Ketan. And if she's your mother-in-law, it's too late for her to be Mima'enes. Now the Gemara actually wants to entertain possible cases where a mother-in-law could be Mima'enes. And what this seems basically to revolve around is the question of whether she could have become pregnant and delivered as a Ketana. If she could have had a baby as a ketana, then we could certainly conceive of a case where the brother now married the ketana of the ketana. Of her husband that was married to her through a non-father because she was ma'enes. We could certainly conceive of a case. So what we have to establish is whether a ketana can have a baby. So Tanan Rav Bibi Kameh Rav Nachman. Now Rav Bibi was saying over a bride in front of Rav Nachman, which said that Shalosh Nashim Mishamshot Bimolch. There's three types of women who are supposed to use a contraceptive in order not to get pregnant. A molch is sort of the modern equivalent of a diaphragm in which the semen is absorbed. So ketana is the first one. Ooh, that's interesting. Meuberet, and she's pregnant, the second case. Umenikan, a nursing mother. The reason for using contraceptives is because the ketana shema titaber v'shema tamut. We're afraid the ketana might get pregnant, and then she might die. Now that sounds like, if she gets pregnant, she's not going to die. She could get pregnant, and she could deliver, and everything would be okay. I don't know how they like this in the Beis Yaakov's today, but we certainly want to teach the girls the Shalosh Shalosh M'Shamshes B'Moich, right? But anyway, it says over here, Shema Titaber V'Shema Tamut. We don't want a Me'uberet to get pregnant, because she's already pregnant, despite the fact that it's unlikely that she could reconceive. But if she would, Shema Teaseh Ubras Sandal. If a woman gets pregnant in the midst of a pregnancy, so there is a possibility that the growing second Ubar will now be damaged the Uber. Because they're not properly, they're not growing together. Furthermore, we're also afraid now, a menika, because if she gets pregnant, so then she'll have to stop nursing, and shematig mobina, and that, of course, is a dangerous thing to stop nursing. She may end up having to use Similac or something. The yamut, and the poor, the poor child will die. In any event, we define over here the ketana that we're referring to is the ketana vibat yud alef shana v'yom echad ad yud beit shana v'yom echad. So the ketana that's referred to over here that she could get pregnant is from the age of 11 until the age of 12. Pachot mikan v'yeter mikan, but before the age of 11 and after the age of 12, we don't have a problem. Mishameshi kedarka v'holechet in Rabbi Meir, because she won't get pregnant before 11, or at least not enough of a chashash that she'll get pregnant before 11. And there's not a chashash that she's going to be physically damaged by her pregnancy after 12. So, but during that year, she should be mishamesh b'moch. V'chachamim omrim, achat zo v'achat zo mishamesh k'darka v'holechet. The chachamim say it doesn't matter. Even if pregnancy would be dangerous, she doesn't have to worry about it to be mishamesh k'moch, or she's not allowed to talk in a moment with some machlokas rishonim. And min hashamayim yirachamu, mishum shenem hashomer psoyim hashem. God protects fools. So fools don't take precautions against pregnancy. God will protect them. So again, here there's a big machlokas we've shown him, which has major implications for Psak Halacha L'maisa Ad Hayom Hazeh, is this now a heter, or is this that she has to be Meshameshet Kamov? Rashi learns this as a heter that Rabbi Meir is giving to use contraceptives, but if L'maisa she felt confident enough that, I'm not going to worry about it, so then Enochinami, there's a right to be Shemet Zayim Hashem, whereas the Chachomim are saying that there's not even a heter, you have to be in a mouth of Rosh Hashanah. Whereas Tosis learns, no, that's the pshat is over here, that according to Rabbi Meir, she has to use contraceptives. According to the Chachomim, she's not b'chuyeves to use contraceptives because of the Shomer Tzayim Hashem. The Shomer Tzayim Hashem applies in cases where an act is not considered to be dangerous. In other words, you could ask, what's the heter to cross the street? There's a certain level of risk that's associated with crossing the streets. Yes. On that, we say, Shemer Tzayim Hashem. At what point are you no longer a fool? You're not a Shemer Tzayim Hashem. If most people would not do it, if most people would not cross the street, then you wouldn't be allowed to cross the street either. Because at that point, it's v'shamartem od nafshasechem. V'shamartem od nafshasechem. You're not allowed to take risks unless those risks are socially defined as excessive, as acceptable risks. What defines it? Dosh be rabim. If rabim are not makbid, that's what the Gemara elsewhere defines it. So therefore, in a dosh be rabim, you don't have to worry. Like I said, most pregnant women are so concerned about getting, nursing women, let's say, really so concerned about getting pregnant, they figure most nursing women don't get pregnant anyway. So therefore, there would not be an absolute chiyav. But otherwise, everybody would be made as an absolute chiyav. This, by the way, a fantastic tshuva by Rav Henkin that I mentioned here before, that this no longer applies. This only applied, basically, at times where, indeed, the chashash was very low. L'maisa, hormonal controls have tapered off very considerably. Why exactly that happened, nobody quite knows. Some say it's diet, so on. But in any event, women are no longer protected against pregnancy for 24 months after delivery, the way they used to be. And since that time, Rav Henkin points out, there has not been a dosh bei rabim. In other words, the world has been very careful to use contraceptives so that people don't get pregnant. So where's the dosh bei rabim? So therefore, it's according to nobody is there a dosh bei rabim b'zman hazeh. So he held that you were mechuyev to use contraceptives for 24 months, always after pregnancy, nursing or not nursing, because pregnancy alone is dangerous. Since pregnancy alone is dangerous, and there was no dosh bei rabim to get pregnant within 2 years, because nobody got pregnant within 2 years. So therefore, there would be an absolute chiyuv, both according to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbanan. Again, this depends now on the on this machlokas here we show them as well to some extent, possibly. In any event, what we see over here is Minika Omar, Shema Titaber, Vishema Tamut. That makes it clear that it's all maybes, right? In other words, she might get pregnant and deliver okay and nothing will happen and everything is fine. But what that means is that we could conceive of a child who has a mother who is a ketana and now is married to the brother of that, of the person who married the ketana, and he ends up finding his mother-in-law falling to him for yibum, and she could have been mimayla in his brother before she fell to yibum. He married his niece. What's so crazy about that? Makes a lot of sense, but then the Mishnah doesn't. The Mishnah doesn't make sense. The Mishnah says that there's no such case. As the Gemara, Kin Matzino Chamoto Mema'enet. According to this, a mother-in-law could be Mema'enet because she's still a Ketana. V'tzanani, yet our Mishnah says, Yata Yachol Lomar B'chamoto Ve'im Chamoto Ve'im Chamiv Shinim Tzu Islandit O Shemiyanu. That couldn't possibly, your mother-in-law or your grandmother-in-law couldn't possibly be an islandist, okay, that's true. But it also says she couldn't possibly be Mimahenet because she's a Ketana. She couldn't be a Ketana. And that's not true. Answers the Gemara, let's change that. Instead of reading Shema Titaber v'Shema Tamut, read it as Shema Titaber v'Tamut. In other words, Shema titaber, and if she would, so then tamut, in which case Shema tamut. That's the point. But enochinami, if there is a daughter that you married of this person, then she can't be iktana, the mother, because she wouldn't have made it to carry full term. So, Ema Shemet is Abir B'Tamut, Yomar Rabba Bar Livoy, Gvul Yeshla. This is exactly as Rabba Bar Livoy explained, this whole question of the age at which we talk about pregnancy or possibilities of pregnancy. There are certain boundaries. And we're talking about Kodem Hazman Hazeh, it was before this period that we're talking about here of the 11 to 12 age. Ina mitaberet kol ikar. She won't get pregnant, and therefore she doesn't need contraceptives. Tokh hazman hazeh hi meita v'ubra meit. During that year, she could get pregnant, and then she would die. The child wouldn't make it full term. Liachar hazman hazeh hi chaya v'ubra chay. Now, well, wait a minute. Is this true? Any of that? Tani Rabba Bar Shmuel, yata yachol lomar b'chamato ve'im chamato ve'im chamim shenimtzu aylonit Oshemianu Shekfar Yaldu. That's a whole different thing. He's saying the meaning of the Mishnah, that the Brayta is saying here, the meaning of the Mishnah is that there's no possible way that your mother-in-law could be Mima'enet because she already had a baby. Thought because she couldn't be a Ketana is the point. I mean, because she already had a baby. I mean, if the issue is because she's not a Ketana, just tell me she's quite a good law. I mean, what do you mean she already had a baby? I mean, obviously she had a baby. It's your mother-in-law we're talking about. Whether she could have been a Ketana, so just say, because that would have meant she's quite a good law. So what does this mean? We'll have to change it according to this. Ella, actually, Liolam Shema Titaber V'Shema Tamar. The truth is, she could have become pregnant at 11, and she could have had a child at 11, before she turned 12. And she would have been, you'd say, a ketana, but that wouldn't have mattered because of Akasha. What about the Mishnah that says that how could a mother-in-law be a ketana? Omer of Safa, that's because bonim hareihem kesimanim. In fact, having a child is the equivalent of having simanim. So that a child at the age of 11 is the equivalent of having simanim at the age of 12. That does the matter. In which case, she's by definition a gedola. That's the point. She's no longer capable of miyun. The etiyamis, others say it's even better than that. Banim adifim is simanim. Having children is even better than reaching puberty as normally measured. Because my nafkamina. Why, in what sense better? I mean, who cares? Because even Rebbe Yehuda, see, Rebbe Yehuda holds that actually she can continue to be mima'enet until such time as not only that she has pubic hairs, but that she's actually fully adolescent. That there's a period between the first appearance of pubic hairs, which is called shtei saros, until there's actually a ribuy of sarot. But he would be maida that if she had a child, that is better than just shnei simonim, which is normally the sign of puberty. Over here would be the equivalent of a completely adolescent girl. Rebbe Zvi said that's not the point. The point isn't that the children are the simonim, or better than simonim. The point is that there is no way that she would have had a child unless, in fact, she had already reached puberty. It's not that the child is a simon of puberty. It's that puberty is always expressed the way it normally is in secondary sexual simonim. So she would have had pubic hair. Check and see if she has pubic hair. No. Chashin and Shem and Nashulim. The fact that whether she has or does not have right now is not the point. The point is that since she has obviously reached puberty because she has a child, so therefore the question of whether lamaisa we can detect pubic hair is not important, because Chashin and Shem and Nashru will say, even if we don't see anything, but obviously there once was, or probably there once was, and it's now fallen out and we don't detect it, but in any event, we have to assume that she's a gedola and therefore she cannot be mima'enet. But wait. What is it? Well, who cares what she says? Hey, Nikolaman, you are Machosheshin. Wait a second. Isn't there a big machlokas in Nida about whether we're Choshishin? Avalaman, you are Machosheshin. We should say, if you hold it, we don't ever suspect that our bedika for pubic hairs is meant to be non-definitive, because maybe she once had it and doesn't now. We understand that she goes through a massive physical change in having a child. There everybody is made that it certainly that could have had an effect on her, and it may be that over there indeed she lost their original pubic hairs. Okay, next thing we say is that if the tzarot go ahead and they get married, and then now there's a tzara of a tzara that now refalls to the original brother who couldn't take the erva, now the tzara of the tzara will also be asura to the brother. Minani mili. Omri v'yinar domar kro. Litzror. It doesn't say lotzura, it says litzror. So atorah riptat tzarot harbe. This could go on forever. Tosis learns, Tosis at the beginning of the Masechta learns, that the question over here was talking about afilu mea. That's the point. Well, how do we know that it goes on forever? So we're saying, litzor means that it could continue. Whereas Rav Ashi says, once I know that a tzora, again, Tosis is learning, once I know that a tzora patters a tzora, the obvious reason is that that tzara that couldn't get married in the first place remained an eishes ach, now shalom b'mokam mitzvah. So she became asura, in which case she patered now the other woman that was married to the other brother with her, because now that woman is a tzara. But if that's the case, that goes on ad infinitum. We don't need a limud. Once you're telling me that there's such a thing as a tzara tzara, then by definition it'll go on forever, no? Don't you have a right to conclude that? So svarahi, tzarad my taima asira, the b'mokam erva kaima. Obviously, we're treating the tzara as an actual erva. Why? Because she is now an erva. She's an eshetach. So if that's the case, the tzara v'tzara nami is together with an eshetach. So my b'mokam erva kaima, and I don't need a special drosha to tell me afilu in mea. Not if you learn it like this. It means that's over. I don't know. There is a difference. Because you need to know Tzara's Tzara in order to be certain that that's the reason, that Tzara's Ptura. But once you see that, then you know that it would go on forever. That's where Bashi's for. One side, anyway. Okay. Now, let's take a look at the Mishnah. Okay. The Mishnah, the closing words is that the Mishnah explains itself. After the Mishnah said that if the wife of the deceased brother had previously either died or was Megureshet or had been Mimaenet or was found to be an Ilonit, then the other one is not considered to be a Tzoras Erva, and she can be actually the Yavama to the one who was previously Aser. So the Mishnah asks, Ketzad, when do we say, for instance, that imetu tzorotehem mutaraot, haita bito achat mikola arayota elu? If, for instance, his daughter was married to his brother, one of these other arayot was married to his brother, velo isha acheret, and the brother had another wife, and then meita bito, his daughter died, o nitgarsha, or she got divorced, v'acharkach, very clearly, everything is in that order, and then the brother died, tzarata muteret. Asks the Gemara, in other words, you're telling me that the daughter had been married, maybe for 20 years, together with this other woman. The day before her husband died, he was megarisher. So now the other woman is okay for him to marry because she's not a tzarat erva at the time of the death of the brother, which defines the nature of the chiyuv of yibum. Correct? That's what the Mishnah is saying. There's no way out of that. The problem is that the Mishnah later on says, "Ask the Gemara afilu kanasu lebesof gireisha," telling me that even though his brother had married this other woman at the same time that he was married to his daughter, and now only after that, many years later, he divorces the daughter. What you're saying is the fact that they had shared 20 years married to the brother is meaningless, because all that counts is at the moment of the Chiyuv Aviva. Was there a Tzaras Erva? No? Then it's okay. So if an instant before the brother died, the daughter had died or had been Mugureshet, let's say there was a car crash, and we ascertain that the wife, which was his daughter, died first, and then a minute later, her husband died, and the other wife who was at home was okay. So now the brother would have to be miyabing the other wife because his daughter died a moment before his brother. That's what you're saying. Okay. That means a few karas basof kirech for aminu. And yet, it seems clearly that that's not the case. Let's take a look at this mishnah from later on. Shalosha achi. In a case we have two brothers, shnayim mehem nesuim shtei achayot, two of whom are married to two sisters, and the third is married to an unrelated woman, echad nesuim nochrit. Now, one of the brothers who was married to the sister divorces his wife. So gireish echad mibaalei achayot ishto, and then at that point, umet hanasui nochrit. Now the third brother who was married to an unrelated woman dies. The one who had been megarish, his wife now, takes the wife, beyivum, of his deceased brother, and then he dies. So zohi shamru, that's the case what we say. She'imeto nitgarshu tzorotayim mutarot. There we say that because the original erva over here, which was the sister of his wife, where she had been married, but there had been a gerushin or a death before she falls to yibum, that's where we say that it's okay to take the tzara. Now, this case is talking about, it says beferish, he divorced his wife, who was the sister of the third brother's wife, who was the one that in the end now is doing all the yibum. And then he went ahead and he took the nochrit from the other brother. So that at the time that he married the nochrit, b'yibum, he was not married to the sister of the other brother to whom she now falls to yibum, because he had already given her a get. Then the third brother has to marry the nochrit. But had he married the nochrit while he was still married to the sister of the wife of the brother, of the last surviving brother, then the fact that a day later he was megarish, that sister wouldn't have helped. The nochrit would not have fallen to this, the last surviving brother. Why? Because she would be considered to be a tzarat erva. That's exactly the opposite of what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah says, all that's important is that at the instant of the death of the brother, he was not simultaneously married to the erva and the tzara. That's all that counts. And over here it says beferish that at the time of the marriage of the brother, long before his death, he was no longer married to the one who was an erva on the brother that ended up doing the yibum on his wife. But had he 20 years earlier been married to that brother's sister-in-law, his wife's sister, and now nobody even remembers that they were married, but they had been married 20 years before, and now that brother dies, leaving another woman who had nothing to do with her, but had been married during that time, long, long ago, there's no yibum. The contradiction, complete contradiction to the case in the Mishnah. How do you explain that? Omer, Rabbi Yirmi, you don't explain it. It's obviously Tavra. You're going to have to, it's broken. Nishanazu, lo shanazu. There's no way that the Tana of our Mishnah also said that, because it's absolutely contradictory, and it's making opposite assumptions. What are those opposite assumptions? It's very simple. It's easy to see what the opposite assumptions are. we can view Yibum and the Zika of Yibum in two different ways. What we could say is that at the time of a marriage of a brother, that marriage has two possible implications. It has implications vis-a-vis him and his wife, but until he has a child, that marriage was the act that also creates a certain quantum state of relationship to another brother. Because at any moment, she could be his Yavama. The moment that he gets into a car accident, this woman is now Mizukeket Midiraisa to his brother. Where did that Zika come from? From his own condition of that woman. So it means that every time a man is Makadish a woman, it's always with the recognition that there's another superimposed state of that Kiddushin affecting his brother. Now, if he is, at the time that he does that Kiddushin, married to a woman who is Asura on his brother, then the state is never created. Because we say, he's now marrying a woman at the same time that he's married to this brother's daughter. When he married the daughter, obviously that was a different type of Kiddushin. It wasn't the Kiddushin that creates Zika to a brother, because the brother is her father, and there's no way that Zika could apply to an Erva. But if that's the case, if there's a din of a Tzoras Erva, the same thing is true. There's no way at the time that he marries this other woman who's unrelated, but he's at the same time married to his brother's daughter, there is no way that we can look at that Kiddushin and say, aha, that Kiddushin has other implications. The implications being that if he dies, then the Kiddushin affected his brother to create a Zika. How could it affect his brother? He was married to his daughter. So now you'll say, but tomorrow he divorces his daughter. No. So what? So where's the Yibum going to come from now? It's too late. The Kiddushin that he created is not a Kiddushin that created the relationship with a brother for Zika. Now obviously, our Mishnah looks at it completely differently. Our Mishnah looks at it, look, a guy gets married, it doesn't mean she's marrying his brother. There's no relationship to the brother whatsoever, except the Isser of Erva that the Torah defines. That's because of an incestuous relationship. It has nothing to do with the fact that something about my marriage affects my brother. Now, after the death of a brother, there the Torah creates a new situation in which Zika is handed over, so to speak, from above, and the Torah says, I view you as having duties. And those responsibilities create a relationship, which we call Zika, to which the original marriage is irrelevant. I don't need the kinyan of the original marriage to affect the brother to make the yibum. And that's two completely different versions of the same thing, but with very significant differences. If you hold that the yibum is created, the Zika of the yibum is created at death, then that's all we look at. Is he married to the daughter at death? No. She died a second before him. Well, fine. Then this is a classic case of Yibum. Why is the history important? On the other hand, if we view every Yibum as being a possible culmination of a state of marriage, and every marriage includes within it the possibilities of Yibum, so then there was no such possibility here. Because at the time of the marriage, he was married to this guy's daughter. Or to his sister-in-law, whatever the case was. Therefore, our Tana, says the Gemara, obviously we have a machlokes over here. Tavra, you have to break this up now into two. It's impossible to put it together. Mishu shanazu lo shanazu. Har Tana savar mitama pelet. Obviously, the Tana of our Mishnah holds that it's the death of a husband that now creates the state of hapala, in other words, a falling to Yibum. And therefore, what's important is only the moment of death. If she's not at Tzorat HaBat or at Tzorat HaChot or whatever, at that point, then she's not at Tzorat Hol. Whereas Hai Tana Sava, Nisuin HaRishonim Epili. Obviously, the other Tana of the three Achim. I keep wondering whether there's a difference of a Nisuin HaRishonim in cases where the likelihood is that a person will get shot for some reason.
What?
Or eaten alive by a lion, or that kind of thing. whether that creates other issues, maybe even to give them in places where there aren't children or something like
that. Let me clarify that. I'm sorry.
Wasn't for the back.
So the Nisuim HaRishonim, being the source of the Yibum, are now going to be defining the moment of Tzaras HaBas. Rava says, I can make it work. I can make it work. Actually, it didn't mean what it said. That's how I make it work. And what I say is, you could say that the Mishnayot are generated in here as a zo ve'en tzarich lomar zo. In other words, look, first I tell you my opening Mishnah. I basically show you all my cards. Okay? Now we play them out. That's one of the ways in which Tana does something. So we want to tantalize you. Ah. So we tell you about a case in which, well, obviously the case where at the time of the actual marriage, she wasn't even married anymore to the Tzara. For sure that's a case in which we would say that there's no problem of Tzara's Erva if she was Mima Enes, or if she had been made, or if she would Nibgarsha. But I didn't mean to say that's the only case. So if we look at the entire Masechet as a playing out of a Seder of Mishnayos, the same way we say Zo Ve'en Tzarich Lomar Zo in a Mishnah, we say it within a series of Mishnayos. That's the point. Maybe there isn't a machlokas on this.
The first, by the way, so the way you say Nisum Mishon, the first one, so even if it goes reverse also, let's say Mary is a plain woman, so the Nisum make a Zika. Let's say Mary is just an Nochriya.
You mean just the opposite? Let's say he was married to Nochriya and then he marries
a Bat.
Mm-hmm. So obviously he's not going to say that there's no din. So we have to understand the Nisuim HaRishonim not in the sense of only the Nisuim HaRishonim, but the Nisuim HaRishonim at the point in which they can now be actualized. It was only a virtual state. In other words, it was the possibility of. The possibility can be destroyed.
No, the Zika that was there in Nisuim HaRishonim, which is broken by the fact that now I can't have it.
Right. I can't use it. Yeah.
There's a Nisuim, but there was no other brother at the time of the Nisuim.
That's
and then he divorced her, and then there was a brother that got born.
Right, so it doesn't necessarily have to be the act. That's exactly what Ramati is pointing out. It's not the act of the Nisuim, it's the existence of that kinyan.
And it only is extant as long as the one is alive, but if she dies, then the Zika disappears.
If who dies? Yeah.
The one, the
interim
one that caused the secondary
Zika.
Lost again.
Yeah. Now the closing words at the last of the Mishnah is that if a woman could have been Mima Enet, but was not Mima Enet, and now finds herself as a Ktana who fell to Yibum, and now there's a problem because Midiraisa, she's not really married, and therefore we can't say she paters the Tzara, but Midirabbanan, she's married, so therefore she asers the Tzara. So in that case, what we do is we say, let's do Chalitza and not do Yibum. The question suggests itself immediately, why not have her do the Miyun now? That takes her out of the picture, and then we can do our Mitzvah, we can do our Yibum. I mean, why should we let her presence mess things up if as soon as she does Miyun, she basically addresses the issue retroactively? If she's annulling the marriage, if he annuls the marriage, why can't she just cancel it out and now let the guy do his mitzvah Yibum? Why should we limit it? It's not clear whether this means that the Beis Din should encourage her to do Miyun. We'll see that there's a machlokas later on about whether we do that kind of thing. However, as Tosis points out, later on the issue is whether we do that kind of thing where she's married to the Yavan. So in order to take the problem away from the Yavan, do we tell a woman to cancel her marriage to her husband? And maybe over here we would tell her to cancel the Zika to the Yavan. I mean, maybe... Okay, but the Gemara may mean also that... But at least if she was Mima Enet, couldn't it work now? I mean, it's not the way you're saying it. Is if she could have been the Mayanet, but didn't at the time of the death of the brother, it's too late, and there's no way to be Mekayim Yibam. That's what the Mishnah seems to be saying.
It would be a financial loss to them, you know, if they were forced to be the Mayanet.
And that we'll talk about later. But it's part of the same question. So let her do the Miyun now in order to be Mekayim the Mitzvah Yibam. Lema misayeh lele Rav Hoshaya. The fact that the Mishnah doesn't entertain that case, it seems to be a riot to Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya says that a woman can be mima'enet to ma'amar, only to ma'amar, but not to his zika. Normally, remember, we spoke about ma'amar. There's a lot of words that we have to get used to over here. I know we've gotten used to yavam, chalitza, yibum, tzora, tzora, tzora. We've gotten used to all the names of all the arayas. We've had the concept of zika and what zika means. We were just introduced today to the concept of mapelet. What is the mapelet? Is it in terms of Nisrim HaRishonim? Is it in terms of Misa? Here's a term which we actually met once before, which is called Ma'amar. Ma'amar means where a man says to a woman who is his Yavama anyway, Hareyat Mekudeshet Li, and the Chachomim, even though it has no meaning in the D'oraisa sense, the Torah already created a state similar to Kiddushin, which is called Zika. And here, when he's a Mekadesh her, it does create a problem. The problem being that he can no longer give her Chalitza. He's also going to need a get, because the Kiddushin Derabbanan, Kiddushin can't be canceled by Chalitza. Kiddushin can only be canceled by Gerushin. So if he gives Ma'amar, and now he wants to do Chalitza, it's not going to be enough. He needs to also, yes, we'll see that later. He needs to also give Chalitza. Ma'amar also has implications for the other brothers in ossering them to marry once he gives Ma'amar. That's an issue we'll see later on. Now, the din is that if he gives Ma'amar to a Ketana, and she is Mima'enet in him, and says, I don't like you. So at that point, he does not need to give a get for his Ma'amar, because it cancels the Kiddushin that he made, and she's left as a regular Yavama. The question is, can she be Mima'enet to the Zika? That's the question. That's what you're saying. You're saying, if the brother already died, then can't she be Mima'enet to the Yavam, which essentially cancels her original marriage, and now there should be no problem of marrying the Tzara, because she was no longer married retroactively. And Rav Hoshaya said that no, she can't do that. She cannot be Oiker, the original Nisuin, to his brother to take off Yibum and to walk away without Chalitza. There's no way to do that. So let's say if she was a Ketana, and she now was Mima Enet, she can't say, whoa, glad I'm out of that mess. She's still going to need Chalitza, because she can only be Mima Enet to the new Kiddushin of the brother who tried to give her Mimer. But she can't be Mima Enet after the death of the brother to remove Zika. It's too late. Should have been Mima Enet before he died. Should have thought of it then. So now she's going to require Chalitza. So if that's the case, in our Mishnah, where we're trying to get her to undo the original Kiddushin, this would be the reason, if we hold the Rav Hoshaya, that the Tana doesn't entertain her post-death miyun on her original husband. Right? And therefore, all that can happen is that she asers the Tzora, at least min Rabbanan, there's no way to get rid of her, so that we will only be able to do Chalitza, and not Yiba. Riot Rav Hoshaya? Says the Gemara, not necessarily. Remember the old problem of Tzoras Erva.
What was that?
It's an extension of the owner. The old problem of Tzoras Erva is that, we just had this, if a guy is... it's hopeless. It's an amazing thing, the human mind. You know what things are hopeless. So if you had a situation where a man was married to someone, let me just close it, it could go on forever. Fellow was married to a guy's daughter, so now he became the father-in-law. This is now this. Oh gosh!
Open.
to start again. Okay, a man's son marries a woman. She's now kalato. If she is mima'enet in him, she was a katana, she's not kalato. And he can marry her, remember?
Because
the erstwhile father-in-law can marry her because he isn't really a father-in-law, because when she's mima'enet, she cancels the kedushin, and there's no iser in sleeping with a woman or marrying a woman with whom your son had an affair. That's not the point. So every mian basically translates any relationship that they had into a non-sanctioned, there was no marriage, and therefore there's no iser on the father. However, we said nonetheless, in a case where there's a problem over here of a yibum, it's falling to him from his brother who married, then he's got a problem. Because then, at the moment of the death of the brother, when now the Bezdin has to relate to the question of, is this his daughter-in-law, at that point it's too late, because it's nearest Keturas the Kalato. And that was true about all of the cases we said earlier. And that's a Gezerah, just because of how it looks. And we had that yesterday, the Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel. If a woman was a Ketana, and she's Mima'enet in the Baal, who is your son, then she is now Muteret La'aviv. However, if she's Bima'enet in the Yavam, so she now is trying to cancel the marriage originally when she falls to the brother, it's too late. She is now Asura La'aviv, because Alma Mishat Nifila Niret Kikalato, at the moment that he died, the brother, it looked as if the woman that is falling to him is his daughter-in-law. So you see, okay, but it was all annulled. It's too late. At that point now, she becomes asura to him as his kala. In which case, we say the same thing is true over here. The reason that we will not accept a miyun after the death of the brother is only in cases of tsaras erva, because she looked like an erva at the time that she fell. That doesn't mean that in a case where a ketana falls to yibum, that she cannot be canceling the yibum by being mima'enes after the death of her husband. Well, how does that follow? It may well be that the Tana agrees that mian can be done ex post facto to be chal retroactively on the nisuin with the brother who is deceased. Except that in this case it won't help. Because at the moment that the brother died, the situation of there being a tsarat erva is already written in stone in people's mind because of the fact that it made the papers. Once it makes the papers, there's no way to get it out of the papers. That's the idea.
What made the papers?
Correct. Yeah. The fact that there's, this is interesting. The guy's daughter-in-law fell to him for yibum. Oh, it's an amazing case. I was going to know the real story.
It's not the same as the Tama Kalosa, which you say Nirika Kalosa, so we don't say that.
Who was it, Nogea? Was it Nogea that was Nirika Kalosa? What do you mean, Nirika Kalosa? People shack up all the time. Why does that mean marriage? It's a significant other. No? You tell me today, somebody comes along, his son is with a girl, and then we find that the father with the same girl, people are going to have a blink of an eye.
It happens all the time.
Is it significant other?
Death, it's more like...
Once it's defined in the Bezdin, so then it becomes already, that's an issue.
These are brothers from the mother only, not from the father. Is that the case?
No, of course not. How can you fall to Yibam, a brother?
No, the case we just discussed. Why are we concerned? Of course she's his daughter-in-law. She's his daughter-in-law from the previous marriage. Is she not?
We're talking about a regular kalato. No, what are you referring to?
The kalato.
Why a previous marriage?
Where it appears that she was his kalato.
It's just because she has another
Shimon dies, and his wife falls to Yibum.
Yeah.
To another brother. But there's something going on with the father-in-law.
But that is the father.
Not that he looks like it, he is one like the father.
Except that she's Mimaina. So therefore she was never married
to
his son.
Okay.
Right.
Is there any possibility that the mian only works to the original husband?
Yep. There is. Okay, so in this case, it may well be that without the complication of Tsoras Erva and appearances, we would have allowed them in, but it doesn't help us because of the appearance problems. It's nearest Tsoras Bito, that's all. In this case, therefore, we said, what are you supposed to do? The only thing left is to do chalitza to the tzara, because min rabbanan she's a tzara's erva, because we can't use mian for other reasons. So, at last, it's true, at last. Now, the truth is, this Mishnah is very much part of the first Mishnah, to the extent that we actually had to include it, we actually had to look ahead and read it, in order to understand the response, Rebbe's response about why we're so sure that the Mishnah is going out, leave it to Rebbe Yehuda, remember? So, Sheish Arayot Hamurot Me'elo, besides the 15 women mentioned in the first Mishnah, there are 6 additional cases of incestuous problems. The reason, we're calling them Hamurot, only in the sense that they couldn't possibly be married to your brother. In other words, they're chamurot in terms of their relationship. The following, yeah, they're close in terms of incest. So that therefore, mipneishin is suot lachavim, since by definition they cannot be married to your brother any more than they could be married to you, so therefore, believe it or not, that makes their tzorot mutarot. Because if they're not married to your brother, then there's no such thing as a catchy yerva, as we said. And therefore, Emo, your mother, is just as much going to be usher on your brother, because your brother can't marry your mother since she is the woman that your father obviously impregnated, somehow or another, or she wouldn't be your mother. And therefore, if that's the case, how could he be married to her? Now that's only true, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that a brother cannot marry a woman that his father impregnated. Fine. But, I mean, otherwise it would be no problem. That was our raya that the Mishnah is going to leave it to Rebbe Yehuda. That was Rebbe's raya earlier. Because it mentions separately Imo and Eshet Aviv. So this means an Imo who is not Eshet Aviv. Besides that, a father's actual wife, legal wife, is as much a surah to you, to your brother, as is to you. So how could he have possibly married her to fall to you in Yibam? So she never will fall to you in Yibam. Achot Aviv, a father's sister. Achoto Me Aviv, a sister from a common father, who almost all the time is also a sister from a common father to a brother from a common father. Therefore, there's no point in mentioning the case where she falls to Yibam. And Eshet Achi Aviv, your common father's brother's wife, your aunt, which is, I said that. Eshet Achi Aviv. Eshet Achiv Mi Aviv. And there'd be no way, even though we could come up with a case in which Eshet Achiv Mi Imo could fall to Yibum, in a case where Eshet Achiv Mi Imo was completely unrelated to the brother who was from a different wife. But we certainly cannot come up to a case where Eshet Achiv Me Aviv, because the Achiv Me Aviv is the one that's always going to be having the same father as you, and therefore is the one that's going to fall to Yibum. And so if she was also on you, she was also to the other brother. So therefore there's no Eshet Achiv Me Aviv. Beit Shammai Matirin Atzarot Achim. Amazingly, all of the above discussion is only true according to Beit Hillel. According to Beit Shammai, what's the problem? Marry one of the other women. Don't marry your daughter. Whoever told you to marry your daughter, Tony. Don't marry the other one. All of, no matter who your brother is married to, if there's a woman that he's married to that you are allowed to marry, take her, be evil.
Referring to the back previous.
Yeah. No such thing as Tzorot. This was the kasha we had asked when Rebbe was trying to claim that the Plukta lo Kamari. What do you mean? Here we see the Plukta Kamari. We said, doesn't confuse us, this kind of Plukta. Beit Shammai Potzlim min Akuna. Therefore, according to Beit Shammai, if we go ahead, Chaltzu, we went ahead and we did Chalitza to the Tzara, so then it's a real Chalitza. And the din is that Chalitza is similar to Gerishin, and the Chachomim offered such a woman to a Kohen. Therefore, if we did a chalitza of the tzora, according to Beis Hillel, that's a joke. When you did chalitza to a tzora, you can't do chalitza to a tzora. She's, all you did was have her pull off your shoes. You might as well go into a shoe store. What's that have to do with chalitza? So therefore, she's certainly not going to be asura to a kohen. So, but Beit Shammai holds that she needed chalitza, it's a real chalitza, and therefore, personally, menakuna, whereas Beit Hillel makshirin, And if you went ahead and you were miyabim her, so according to Beis Hillel, oh my God, you've been sleeping with a woman that's asura, so she now basically becomes psula to the kahuna, because he made her a zayna by sleeping with her beisr. That's the din of a zayna. So therefore, according to Beit Shammai, if they were nityabmu, that's wonderful. They did exactly what they're supposed to do. And now if he dies, she's an almana, so she can get married to a kohen. She can't marry to a kohen gadol, because usually if her husband dies, she's an almana. But she can certainly marry a kohen eliot. Whereas according to Beit Shammai, she can never marry any kohen, because she's a zona. To Beit Shammai. But the truth is, very appropriate for this time of the year, afa pi she'elu, Poslim elu machshirin lo nimnu Beit Shammai milisan Hashem Beit Hillel v'lo Beit Hillel ni Beit Shammai. You should know that despite the fact that you would think that the family register over here would be full of psulim according to one against the other. I mean, Beit Shammai is having people go ahead and marry Ervas because they're tzaras of Ervas. They're also Bishas Ach. The kids are all mamzerim. You don't want to marry that family. My God. Right? Nonetheless, there was never a problem. And Beit Hillel was perfectly happy marrying into the family of Beit Shammai, knowing that if there would be any problem of mamzerut, Beit Shammai would kindly inform them. I think l'shitatchem, you'd probably want to check out somebody else. Not only that, kol ha-taharot va-tmeot, shahayu elu mitaharim ve-elu mitamim. We've seen plenty of examples where according to one something is tame and according to the other it's tahar. Now, nonetheless, there was no problem of borrowing kelim, one from the other, and lo nimnu osin taharot elu agabe elu, because they were each convinced that the other would be concerned for their psak halacha as well, despite the fact that it's not your psak halacha, and would therefore be careful about the dinim of tumah v'tayra l'shitatcha, and tell you what things you can borrow and what things you can't borrow. They're certainly not going to ask, does this have a Beit Shammai badat hechsher? Nobody ever asked.
If the father was a kohen, does he pass it on in the case of a child that would come out of this relationship?
I don't know. Can't think about things outside of our sugya. I'm stuck in the sugya. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. My time at the Beit Shammai. Why does Beit Shammai say? Why are they so convinced? Tosfos says, what do you mean, my time at the Beit Shammai? If you need a reason to ask your tzaras, you don't need a reason to tell you that tzaras are mutaras. I mean, if Beit Shammai holds that Litzror comes to tell me Rabbi Shimon's halacha, as we saw earlier, namely that two sisters that fall at the same time from two brothers are considered to be, now tzorois in terms of the zika itself, even though they weren't married to you, but they're still your sister. It's two sisters, your sister, because of the zika. That's litzron. How about the other case? I mean, the other case over there, we have the Rebbe's drush? I mean, we have plenty of reasons to use Rebbe's drush or something. Why am I looking for a reason to be Matir Tzaris? Just tell me that Beit Shammai holds that Aleha is referring to Rebbe. Litzror is telling me Rebbe Shimon the way Rebbe said. The Likaka and the Yibma is the way the Rabbona were learning, and I don't have any place to tell me that Tzara is Asura. Why do I need a place to tell me that Tzara is Mutter? All right. Question whether it would be more reasonable to darshan it that way and so on. You say that it must be because it's more mistaber to learn litzror to mean literal tzoros and not Rabbi Shimon, unless you have a reason to disagree with the concept of a tzor. In other words, everybody's going to look at that word litzror and say, gosh, what does that mean? So they're going to have two options. They're going to look at it either as Rabbi Shimon says, it's talking about a case where a guy has two sisters that are tzruros to him in Zika. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, litzror means any woman who would be married together with this erva of your sister's, of your wife's sister, is also part of the equation. It's more reasonable to do that than to say it's talking about this new idea of Zika, says Tosfos, unless you have a good reason to say otherwise. So one good reason to say otherwise is you have another marker for Tzara, now this is extra, and it comes to tell me Rabbi Shimon. Or you have some up, or the other good reason would be, somewhere or other the Torah made it evident that there ain't no such thing as a Tzara. Where is the place that the Torah made it evident that there's no such thing as a Tzara that leads Beit Shammai to darshan Tzara otherwise? That's how Tosfos understands the Gemara. So what's the reason? The reason is to be found in the Isser of marrying without the Yibam or without the Chalitza. Namely, Lo tihye eshet hamet hachutza leish zar. So this woman cannot go now and marry somebody else. Yevama yavo alea ulekachalo leisha v'yibma. What does that mean? Hachutza. Hachutza must mean, says Beit Shammai, Michlal di'ika pnimit. What we're saying is, the woman who is the chutza, meaning the chitzona, the one who is not related to him, the one who is a nochrit to him in terms of the yibum, the only one that he would have to marry, ignore the one who isn't a chutza. Why not? Because she's his daughter. That's why she's not a chutza. So what he's understanding is that hachutza is an adjective. Lo tie eshet hamet hachutza. The one of the wives who was the external wife, unrelated to him, shall not marry anybody else but must marry him. Whereas the pnimit, who was one of the above 15 women, she can marry anybody because there's no yibum on her, since the only brother is related to her. But that means that the Torah is saying that in a case where there is an isha pnimit, the opposite of the chutza, then there is still a chutza. Now that means where one wife is a pnimit, a bat, let's say, or an achot isha, whatever it is, and the other isha is a chutza, she's unrelated outside of the context of the yibum, only then does the Torah say, yivama yavo aleha. Lo te eshet hamet hachutza le'izar, yivama yavo aleha. But eshet hamet hapnimit, she can, in fact, go ahead and marry somebody else. So you see that in a case where there's a pnimit and a chutza, the chutza needs yibum, the pnimit doesn't yibum. Classic case of Tzara Zerva, and the Torah is saying, Bedavka, she's mechuyevet in yibum.
You already said
it
again.
I said it four times.
Yeah, I know.
Listen. In Rav Preda's Beis HaMedrash, it was private too.
Am I the only one here who's slightly confused and would like to hear again? In which case,
I mean, I'd love to be Rav Preda and live 400 years and so on and so forth, but, okay. So that's my raya. There is a woman that is chutz, which is the tzara, and there is a woman who is a pnim, which is the erva. And nonetheless, the Amar Achvana, lo tihye sari, she cannot marry anybody else. She's got to go and get yibum. Beis Hillel says, boy, do you misunderstand that one. You know what that's coming to tell me? It's coming to tell me, Rav Yudah Merav Zalocha, lo tihye eshet hamet hachutza means that if another guy who is not the Yavam attempts to marry the eshet hamet, not only is it usher, there's no kedushin of Obichal, despite the fact that there's no Yisur Karet. Because lo tihyeh is army language. It will not be. As we said so. It will not be. I told you that story in the old car. Yeah. I never understood the car we used to always try to steal. That had been bought from Yeshiva used to get cars from the army surplus. You know, it was just to jiggle the car, get it. But it said on it in these big green letters that still had the same army colors and so on. There had tons of stuff after the war that they were just like dumping. 10 cents you bought a car. Anyway, so we would steal these cars all the time. But it said on the car, this car will not start without seatbelt. I was like amazed. Like, how did they have... They were just starting to think of these devices that would prevent... And it said, this car will not start. And darn it, it always started just fine when you jiggled with the starter. Took me years to figure out that they really believe that they say it will not be. It will not be. That's the army. So the same thing over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says she will not be. Okay. She will not be. What that means is that indeed the Kiddushin is not Taksin. That's Loti Yeh. There is no Havaya. Havaya is a Lashon of Kiddushin. It shall not be because it will not be, rather. Will not be because it shall not be. So that's the Chiddush of Rav Yehuda Merab. Minayin she'in Kiddushin tofsin b'yevama. She'ne'emar Loti Yeh eshet ha'met ha'chutz of Yisar. Loti Yeh b'havaya. There shall be no Kiddushin, Lizar. That's the point. But Shammai says, can't you read? What does it say over here? You're reading the word hachutza to mean an adjective? A verb and an object? Isn't it obviously an adjective? If it would say, lo tiyeh chutz, she can't go out. Okay, so then it's describing where it is that she's going to become married to, and you're saying she can't be married to out, so then it's an object. But the way you're reading it is she can't go out, and for that it would have had to say liyot bachutz or achutz. I mean, what's this achutza? So Beit Shammai miktiv lachutz. Where does it say she can't go out to marry somebody else? It's clearly a definition of which woman. It's an adjective. It says chutza. Beis Hillel says, well, don't you know grammar? That's the equivalent of lachutz. The Tanya Rebbe Nechemya Eimer, kol tevad shetzricha lamed betchilata. Wherever you need a lamed at the beginning of a word, put the hay in its place at the end of the word. Hitila katuv hay besofa. You can put a hay at the end of the word, which takes the place of the lamed at the beginning of the word. And Rabbi Yishmael even put into a braita a number of examples. Vatana Deve Rabbi Yishmael, Kagon, Elim, Elima, Machanaim, Machanaima, Mitzrayim, Mitzrayima. Did you ever hear of Divlataima? How about Yerushalayima? How about Midbara? So in other words, all of these cases mean Le Yerushalayim. Tosis says, but wait a second, it says Hachutza. Hachutza certainly, I mean, isn't that the point? Is that it's an adjective? Which Eshet HaMeit? Eshet HaMeit HaKutza, the one that is outside. If it would have said Lo Tia Eshet HaMeit Chutza, of course Beit Shammai would have understood that that means Lo Tia Eshet HaMeit LaChutz. But since it says HaKutza, then it sounds like Beit Shammai is right. It's an adjective, the which wife? The Chutza wife, right? The one who is external as opposed to the Pnimit. Says Tosis, that's not true either. Because the Hay is simply the Hey HaYidiyah in this case. So that Midbara, HaMidbara. HaMidbara is El HaMidbar. Whereas Midbara is LaMidbar, but not HaMidbar. So this is El HaMidbar stresses. HaChutzah would be El HaChutz, rather than Chutz. Now obviously, Beit Shammai's response to that would be, and exactly whom is it referring to when it says Hey? Since it's talking by definition to anybody. The point of chutz, according to you, is anyone at all who isn't this. That's a heck of a way to use a hey ayidiyah. Anyone at all who isn't this. That's a hey ayidiyah. The hey ayidiyah defines the person, not defines what he isn't. So there's an awful lot of hidden grammatical issues that are intertwined over here in the discussion of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and they turn out to be more than grammatical. When one analyzes them, they have to do with the nature of the Havaya, the nature of Kiddushin being something which is defined as that which isn't true about anybody else. If you think about it, all Kiddushin is that. But that makes the everybody else the ones that you're referring to. Okay, that goes beyond that, but you can see it's an interesting thing. Okay, so therefore, Tainas Beit Hillel, it says Lachutz. The way it says Lachutz is by saying Achutza. Beit Shammai, if they're going to be using this to tell me the din of a heter of a tzrora, how do they know the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda Merab to say that kedushin will not be tofsim on an isha who is mizukeket liyibum? They say, you see the word izar? What do you think izar means? What does a zar mean? You ever heard of mamzer? Mumzar. The Gemara analyzes it. That which comes from something which is alien. So something which is completely alienated from you, creates a mum through its alienation. So therefore, the same thing is true over here. If it calls him an ish zar, it obviously means somebody who's not in the set of your potential suitors for kedusha. And therefore, kedushin is a kal. Why do you need to have this hachutza and lo tiyeh? I don't understand. So there is a, it's defining anybody as an izar, right? So that's zarut. Beit Hillel, so wait a minute, that's a good point, actually. Why can't Beit Hillel learn it from there? Enoch Inami, actually he does, you know? Okay, so can we get back to the chutzah? So what does he learn chutzah means now? So now he agrees that it does not mean Rav Yehuda Merab. And it's not a reference to the impossibility of marriage to somebody else. So what is it coming to tell me? It's coming L'rabot ha'arusa. What's the din? If somebody marries a woman, never consummates the marriage, and then he dies, is there still a din of Yibum or not? Isha ha'kutza, it turns out, we agree. It is an adjective. It means a woman who is still externalized to you. Why? Because you never consummated your marriage. But you're legally married because of the kedushin. Lo tiyeh eshet hamet, even though she's only achutza, even though she only has a distant relationship with somebody who's distant, it means they don't have intimacy. So she's a distant wife because she never went to the chuppah. But nonetheless, lo tiyeh achutza yivama yavo aleha, says Beit Hillel. This is what we need it for, to tell me that there's a chiyuv of yivum even in a case where they never made it to the chuppah. And all that there was kedushin. And how does Beit Shammai know that? So idach, he says, it says hachutza. There's chutza and there's hachutza. The idach, chutza hachutza lo mashpon. So it doesn't want to learn both lingudim from chutza and hachutza. Therefore, they don't have any indication that there's no such thing as a tzara. According to Beit Shammai, this woman is two different chutzas. She's a chutzah in the sense that she wasn't intimate with her husband, it's only Erison. She's chutzah in the sense that there's a primit, vis-a-vis the yovan, meaning she is a tzara serva. Nonetheless, yevama yavo aleha. Okay, I think that's more than enough for one trying day. And good. We keep biting off pieces, they get bigger and bigger. We'll be all right one of these days.